This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. What's happening? You ready for the day? You need more time? Do you feel like you need to ease into the day?
Yeah, just a bit more time.
Yeah, right. Okay, let's hit the snooze. All right, let's start again. All right, we'll go back.
Thanks, I wasn't ready for that one.
I could see it in your face.
It's not.
Okay.
All right.
And here it comes. The alarm's coming on again. Okay, sorry.
Okay, I'm ready.
We have to get going. We can't mess around. Gord is coming back today. Isn't that exciting?
The Grand Dame return.
The Grand Dame. All right. I'm pretty much here for today and tomorrow, and then I'm away for a week and a day. Yeah, very excited about that. Yeah, I am. Hugely. Not just the fact that it's like a soft intro to summer, which is epic because it's still beautifully warm in the Mediterranean.
Oh.
Yeah, but also because I think when... I've always maintained human beings, our gestation period's 9 months. I know this is a bizarre theory, but just give me a minute and I'll try to explain it and you can tell me it's bullshit afterwards.
Okay.
So our gestation period is 9 months. So I think humans... we factor in, there is a 9 month acclimatization to a lot of things for us. It takes you 9 months to grow in the womb. Then you consider your first birthday only begins 1 year after the 9 months. So you're technically already 9 months old by the time you get to your year zero.
I'm more fascinated that you think about things like this, but I'm here with you, okay?
So I think that what happens is that we're for the first 9 months of the year, we're really just kind of figuring out the new year, and then suddenly 9 months comes and we're tired. Like, September brings on, like...
some you want to go home type of vibe.
Yeah, and it doesn't last long. It's about for some people it might be 2 or 3 days, but it's about a day, maybe a week for some people who really struggle. But that 9 month window, or that 9 month marker, not a window, is something. There's something significant about it. I always feel a little bit tired at the beginning of September. And I'm not right now. I'm not tired right now. I have nothing to moan about.
Yeah,
but it is something that I've thought of a couple of times. And it seems to me to... maybe I've convinced myself of it.
I think it's in the mind, Gareth.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe. Yeah. It could also be related to my birthday. Who knows?
It could be.
Well, have you started packing? Do you have your 3 different checklists ready for the trip?
I am packed. I had to buy a new suitcase yesterday. Good Lord, those things are expensive,
those
man.
Those things are expensive. Yeah. I saw.
So I bought a fancy one because I thought this is... you know, if you travel quite a lot, then you need a decent suitcase. Because I had a pretty good one. It lasted me, I don't know, 8 years or something. So it did its service, you know. This one, I decided I'm going to buy a good one. I'm going to buy one with wheels that are not wonky. Buy one that's light as hell. I'm going to buy one that it's got that hard shell. Because that's usually protects your stuff a little bit better. And it's got a decent lock on it. And, you know, that kind of thing. So I bought a decent suitcase, and that makes a difference.
How much do you have to look at for something like that?
Well, this one cost me almost $2,500.
Oy vey.
Yeah, it's very expensive, but it was... I think if you take that and you amortize the cost over, let's say, 10 years of travel...
Word of the day.
You like that? Yeah. Put in amortize.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, see, it takes down one word of the day every
day.
Okay. Amortize. Gradually write off the initial cost of an asset over a period.
Ta-da. Yes, that's what I'm doing.
I need more context. Then
okay,
I'll be able
so
to
here
apply.
It is. Here's how it works. So if I'm traveling for 10 years with this suitcase, then it cost me $2,500. So over 10 years, it's only costing me 250 rand a year.
Amortization.
Yes.
See what I did there as well.
Hello, Gordo.
The Grand
Goldilocks.
Gord has made a triumphant return. Look at him. Well. Just get in here. He's giving everyone.
Oh, there are hugs going around.
Look at that.
Hi, Gordon. We've missed you, son of a bitch. People have missed you.
Oh man, have I missed you guys? Oh.
All right. Very nice. Here he is. He's Gord Laws. Hello.
Yeah. Jared was like, not getting a hug.
Coming around and giving me a hug.
Give me a hug, bitch.
So, Gord, people are worried about you because they thought that you were maybe leaving the show and they were very upset. Mm. And we've got so much to catch up on. First of all,
you're alive.
I'm just trying to see if you guys can hear me.
Yeah, we can, loud and clear.
We're
professionals. Yeah. We know what we're doing.
We know what we're doing, Gord.
Yeah, we always have, and we always will.
Can I just tell you quickly?
I'm back. I'm back. There I am. Hello, yay. Gordon.
Did I have you received... just greet yourself?
Okay, well, I've received this video so many times now, and people don't know that it's an actual game that's coming out.
Foot Fighter.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it is doing the rounds, man.
Yeah, we were expecting people to be quite into it because of the response we've had to our build-up content, but this trailer's just become a monster. It's good fun.
It came to me from, I don't know, 20 different places.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry for everyone that it's become a pain in the arse.
No, it hasn't. I love it. It's hilarious.
There is a lot of other fun stuff on the Boot Fighter. We made two trailers for this trailer.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if you picked that up on facebook.com/Boot Fighter.
No.
But we made two trailers of the trailer in build-up for the trailer. And those are audio. So if you want to play those, you can grab them on the Facebook
page. I'm just going to Facebook.
We're like, coming soon, a trailer so sweet, it will knock you in the tits. Oh. Peter Jackson is in New Zealand directing it right now.
Wait, let me find it right now.
I tell you, it is so good to be back, guys. I'm really sorry I've been away for so long. I think it's been 4 weeks, if my count is correct.
Oh, wow.
And that feels like more like 40.
Is this the Behold Chana's the official trailer, or
you'll see it there? It says trailer of the trailer.
Oh right, okay, got
there's
you.
Two of them.
All right, got you.
Trailer of
the trailer two.
Our trailer got two trailers. Right. Yeah.
So let's do trailer of the trailer two, shall
yes.
we?
Yes.
Right, two is a good one. So if anybody's
this
been
is serious
wondering,
business.
Because you really, you've got everyone excited about this.
And dude, it's a real game, and it's about to come out.
All right, so if you saw the trailer or if someone forwarded to you on WhatsApp...
Pretty much exactly a month, give or take a couple of days, it's out.
Let me tell you, if this thing hasn't been on your phone, you have no friends. Because
or you're not South African.
This is the way that stuff gets spread around now. And if you haven't seen Gord's trailer, you
well, I mean, GC, you've known about it since its inception, which is a little over a year ago. And you got excited at the original stuff I showed you and said, let's get on and talk about it. And I said, no, let's do that when there's a game. And so we'll get the guys in with your blessing, and we'll have a proper talk about it. But we'll do that when the thing's about to come out, or when it's
this
just come
falls
out.
Falls outside of the regular remit of entertainment content that we have tried to make in the build-up to Boot Fighter's release, which is probably going to be soon. This trailer is more of a public service announcement, and as such, should be taken seriously. We are giving you 6 weeks, approximately, or a month, whichever takes longer. Notice that a trailer will soon be released for Boot Fighter. And when said trailer does clap the streets, or rather your face through your computer, it's going to be so high octane, so full of explosions, attractive bonnets, ripped men, unnecessary violence, house music tunes, colourful cartoon-like visuals, and the blood, sweat and tears of three oaks who are really hoping you buy this game so that it can make them some money and be all worthwhile. Otherwise, they just pick their friendships up for nothing. So, be prepared for Boot Fighter, the trailer. Thank you for watching this trailer.
I love it. And you know you could end up being a millionaire out of this. You know that.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't know about a millionaire because we haven't got the global reach, but I expect we might make a penny or two.
I'm going to tell you now that, and this may surprise even you, though I know you are appraised of some of this already. There are some South African guys who started a game in Stellenbosch some 4 or 5 years ago. They have made so much fucking money.
The Genital Wars one.
Dude,
is that the one you're talking about?
No. There are people who've done games that have been launched on
there's
various platforms.
There's a South African game that's made 20 million rand profit in the last year, and it's called like, I stand to be correct to what it's called. It's called like Genital Fights or you know, it's basically like a combination of snake and pornography. You start off as a little penis with balls, and you try and like catch your own.
I don't know if that's the one I'm thinking.
Catch
your own ass. Yeah, it's weird.
I don't know what
but
to Google.
Point,
so
the point
I'm not
is,
going
there have
Google
been
anything.
There have
Google
been
some
very successful South African
but
games.
But God, if this thing does, and I think it will, because you know what it harkens back to is something that a lot of people in our generation never got enough of, and that was like Double Dragon.
Side-scrolling 2D beat-em-up games.
Dude,
Golden Axe.
I remember
Ninja
Golden
Turtles
Axe.
Game.
Okay, so when we were kids...
Who did you use in Golden Axe? The dude in the blue, the lady in the red, or the dwarf?
Depends. I tried with all three because I wanted to see which one I had the best talents with.
Yeah,
because
they had different speeds
but
different power settings.
The dude
settings.
In the blue was usually my default. Because
he was your mid. He was your mid-level guy, yeah.
Correct. So
genital jousting. Sorry.
Genital jousting.
Yeah.
When they made 20 million rand.
When we were kids, we used to, my parents would take us out for takeaways sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. This was a bit rare treat.
Oh, best.
Maybe once a month, maybe every 6 months. You never knew, depending on how much money they had.
And it was the whole like event as much as the takeaways.
We would get burgers, we would get chips, we would get a milkshake. It was like fucking Christmas. We got so excited about this.
Fuck your Xbox 360. Oh. Take me to Steers once a month.
But we never had Xboxes or.
Exactly.
We didn't have.
We had Atari Shitbox 9000.
And those, I didn't even have one of those. So they would take us, and then at these takeaway places, they'd have actual arcade games.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a console that was built in.
We have one for Bootfighter. We take it around. It's got two high-powered gaming machines inside of it. I'm going to show you the pictures. It's also, anyone who's interested, go to facebook.com/Bootfighter, B-O-E-T fighter.
But Golden
and we have a... built it into an arcade machine. It's so,
hold
cool.
On. Golden Axe. I would put in so much money to play this game. I think it was like 50
20
cents, or
50
a rand.
Cents at a time, depending on when and where.
And I could not get enough of this
game. And I remember when Mortal Kombat, this is like a few years after that, because we also had Golden Axe at the little shop opposite our primary school. And it was like 20 cents. But then towards late primary school, so I'm talking the very early 90s, when I was like in standard 3, class 5 type of time, Mortal Kombat 1 came out. And nothing has ever stolen my imagination quite like it. But I remember we would travel to this like shop in the anus of nowhere that was way further than the local machine.
See, it sounds disgusting.
Because it was cheaper.
Why?
They had a machine that was like a 50 cents machine, and all of the other ones were like 1 rand machines.
Ooh.
But the cheaper machine at this really shitty little shop that like my one friend Warren's mom Jenny would take us to, because it was far, the sacrifice you paid was that the buttons weren't configured correctly.
Oh no.
So you had to relearn how to play with the different buttons, but it was worth it because you could play like twice as many games with the same amount of pocket money. Those arcade machines in their heyday, just before home consoles got really good, those like Magic Company arcade machines. I still have them at like Monty, but they're like more for little kids. It's more of a.
It's not the same.
It's more of that interactive shit where you like bang the crocodiles on the head
and
you roll the ball up into the thing and you try win tickets. It's not and the cool things where you like have a big motorbike that you sit on. It's more of a ride than it is an arcade game now. But when those things were full of arcade games, I remember queues to play Mortal Kombat. I remember the one in Four Ways had two Mortal Kombat 2 machines, and you had to put your coin like on the bottom of the screen to make a queue. And like then there would be disputes over whose coin was next.
Yes.
And Oaks would just pump money. My pocket money, I think, was 50 rand a month at that time. And I would get it and I would go and spend all of it in about 2 hours playing Mortal Kombat. And then for the rest of the month, it was beg, steal, or borrow to play Mortal Kombat.
That's all you cared about. And this is what I'm getting to, is that this game of yours is a precise... First of all, it's much funnier, much cleverer, much more South African.
Well,
it's real as fuck.
And we all know a bit.
We
That's
all know
what
but,
makes it fun.
I mean, we all have a little bit of boot in us as well.
This is going
down.
To be internationally famous because it's hilarious.
what I will say...
I heard two guys... Listen to this, Gord. I heard two guys... I flew down to Durban on Friday last week. And the Lurys were on. I heard two young guys who are copywriters or account executives or whatever they are. But they're young guys in the advertising industry. So they started off complaining about the advertising business.
As one does.
How hard it is. And then one of them said, have you seen this Bootfighter trailer? And they started talking to each other. I wish you could have been there because you'd have loved this.
The feedback's been amazing.
The one guy says to the other one, wow, they must have the best copywriter for that script because it's amazing.
Did you say, I know that?
I just sat and listened because they were sitting right next to me. And I thought, I'm going to tell Gord about this.
If you ever name drop me, I would be stoked. Because I make a point of not name dropping you, but like
I did to my sister the other day.
It was the other way.
She sent it to me, the trailer, and I said to her, "Oh yeah, that's good.
I know this guy."
She goes, "What?"
But what I will say, I mean, you know, the trailer's doing a lot to build up hype, and there's a long story as to how we accidentally launched the social media about 4 months before we wanted to, and we were worried. We were doing a lot of like memes and funny stuff, and the audience that we'd built were really enjoying it, but some people were getting like, come on guys, like you've been talking about this for 6 months, is there actually a game? And so we decided to dial back. We didn't want to now disappear on our established audience, but we also didn't want to be posting like two or three interesting funny memes a week. We kind of dialed back on it, waiting for a push that sort of starts now. What I will say is that, you know, there's some people who've seen the little gameplay snippet we first released more than a year ago, but they got the impression like the joke is like, okay, it's a Boot and his Boot mate, and they're in a bar and they fight other Boots, and then it's the end of, you beat everyone up and then you win, and ha ha ha, South African Boot game where you fight some Boots. This is a proper story. It's like a playable movie. Even if you're like not that into the gaming, or you think the gameplay is kind of rudimentary, there's all kinds of amazing power-ups. Captain Beer makes an appearance. There's all sorts Captain of cool Beer. Shit. But it's like playing a movie. We've got five main stages, three mini stages, a couple of in-game games, and there's like animated cinema similar to the trailer at the beginning and end of every stage, and in some of the longer stages in the middle of the stage. And like, I can't reveal too much about it, but if you've watched the trailer, I will say watch it right to the end past the credits, because we got an Easter egg at the very end of the trailer past the credits. But it's going to be more than just you go in a bar, you clap some oaks, you get to the end of the bar and you're done.
How long have you been working on this in total?
We're into month 15 now.
Jeez.
We promised ourselves we'd do it in a year. And putting that kind of deadline pressure on has caused us to not take 2 years.
Good.
This is a lot of work.
We got my friend who I've known forever, who's an incredibly talented artist and is responsible for all of the hand-rendered art and the animation, Louis Dupassani. He, when we started out, he was like, we're doing it in a year, whether it kills us or not. Because he's had issues with games where the timeline is open-ended and they never get finished. And by the time you, a year and a half in, everyone doesn't like each other and there's more to do than you thought. And so he put this deadline on and was quite furious about pressuring us about it. Sometimes I was like, why do you care if it's late? And it really makes sense to put a hard deadline on it, because we're late now, but only a little bit. So
yeah, well, listen, good luck. I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
People are going to love it.
Thanks for the support.
You just have to explain to them that it's an actual game coming out, because
not a gimmick or
it's a full on game. Yeah, full on game.
Have you been shopping for private islands yet?
No, I don't know about how look, for me, making money would be lovely. Honestly, I'm not going to pretend I don't like money. But like, for me, the project has been about the project. I just wanted to get it done and make it cool.
I've got a vested interest in this. If Gord does really well, makes a ton of money, then he can make this his full-time Wednesday thing, and he doesn't have to do other stupid work that takes him away from the studio.
I hate that.
I hate it too, Gord.
Oh, man.
Lionel says, morning, team. Good to have Gord back. Fucking finally, says Lionel. Anyway,
biscuit.
Gareth, you were selling cruises a bit hard yesterday. You should watch Hasan Minhaj, Patriot Act. The latest episode is called The Real Cost of Cruises. What is there like an environmental cost or something I don't know about?
I haven't heard of it.
Why don't you do a Parliament fight game? EFF versus ANC, Malema versus Dalil fight scenes, every politician. You know, I think people just don't find politicians funny.
Yeah, we've avoided politics of any kind in this.
It's so irritating.
We've taken measures to avoid race politics, anything like that. But also, just like you say, it's boring and no one cares. We have got, however, one homage to a political figure who I won't give anything more away, but I know that you, Gareth, I can almost guarantee that you will piss yourself. This will be your favorite part of the game, and I'm willing to bet the whole farm on that. And that's all I'll say. There's one political thing, but we've done it nicely.
Didn't I give you some ideas?
You did give us some ideas. You did, yeah.
I know. Then I know what it is.
When you use words like homage.
Homage.
Okay.
I used to play Golden Axe on a Windows 95 PC. I used to have it on a floppy disk. What a throwback. Oh.
Well, can I just name and shame myself? I've never felt more millennial than when I had to Google Golden Axe. And I'm like, is this the standard version? Where's the high def version?
What did you play?
Why is it so pixelated? I don't understand what's going on here. I just vaguely remember these characters from what my older cousins would play. Because I've just realized it was first released in 1989.
And when you murdered the right oak, a little dwarf with a sack of money would be released from him. And you could then get like more health back and stuff.
Right.
And a potion.
What?
Oh, it was the best, dude.
It was a Sega game.
Yeah, because Sega started off making console games. Then making arcade games. Then they made console games, and then they like lost the plot after the Mega Drive and spectacularly fucked their business up. Do you know that the Sony PlayStation was originally made to be a Sega product? and they bailed on the deal at the last second, and Sony were like, fuck it, we'll release it ourselves.
Really?
Yeah, because following the failure of the Saturn and the Dreamcast after the Mega Drive, Nintendo had the N64 and were doing really well and were taking back the market hard. So Sega were like, fuck this, we got to do something. CD's the next thing and we got to get it right. Although they dabbled in CD, but that's beside the point. CD as the main format is the next thing. Got to do it right. Got Sony to develop the what would become the PlayStation 1. Bailed on the deal at the last second and had Philips make them a system. I think the Dreamcast. Wow. And then Sony released it themselves, and the rest is, as they say, history. Sega went back to making arcade games and programming titles for the other. You can play Sonic on Nintendo now.
Oh,
which
man.
Feels ungodly.
Yeah.
Feels just wrong.
Well, I've never really actually been a gamer. I've, full disclosure, I started enjoying those games where you build things like SimCity and Civilization.
Warcraft 1, 2, and 3, dude.
I never really...
And Command and Conquer.
There was a game called Total War, which yes, I quite liked.
That was turn-based,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, enough about this crap because we're geeking out completely here. There is a lot to talk about this morning. We've got a couple of people popping by. Let me give you a preview so that you can prepare your morning accordingly. We've got
preview to prepare your morning.
It's a lot of what is that called? It's called alliteration
or assonance.
No, it's alliteration. Assonance.
Assonance is a vowel.
Ah. Paresh Dyer is going to pop in. He's from the Blockchain Entrepreneurs Club of South Africa. We're going to talk about this event that Luno, and you know we've done some work with Luno in the past, are doing around cryptocurrencies. That's cool. And we thought you might be interested in an event that they're putting on, which is going to be very exciting. It's happening this week, so get ready.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Hewlett is going to pop in. She is the CEO and chief researcher at Next Biosciences, and a South African Singularity University faculty member. We're going to talk about reproductive genetics, testing DNA, designer babies, which I know you will have lots of thoughts on and lots of opinions on. And you can join in that conversation on 079-748-2090.
If you've got the opportunity to make your baby less shit, yeah, take it. Like, no, I think I'll keep it as shit as it gets.
Thank you, like, God.
I think I'll just gamble on all the shit potential.
Yeah.
I'd like it to be a bit fucking bratty, if possible, if it could be a bit slow. Maybe have a predisposition to rooibos addiction. That would
and
be great.
And short.
Oh, have it short. Bad teeth, if possible. If it could be bald by the time it's 24, that would be fucking great. And let's give it a predisposition towards obesity. Thanks.
Sounds hey, like I went. I went out on a date last night.
Oh, did you?
How did it go?
I suppose you could call it.
Was it blind or is it like not your first time with this individual?
No, I've met her a couple of times, and we've known each other probably properly for about a year. But before that, I mean, when I first met her, I thought she was the first rate bitch from hell. She was mean. She was rude to everyone. She was like standoffish and horrible.
She sounds perfect for you, Gareth.
Playing hard to get, Gareth. That's what everyone thinks as well.
And we ended up we've spent quite a lot of time together. And then I suddenly decided, you know what? I kind of like being around this girl. And she invited me for dinner last night for my birthday, which I thought was quite nice.
Happy birthday about that, by the way.
Thank you very much.
The day before yesterday, huh? Mazel.
Correct. Mazel. Thank you. And Simontov and Mazel Tov and all the rest. Mm-hmm. And it was really pleasant. Went to this place, and the problem was I ordered what I thought was a sushi starter.
Uh-huh.
It ended up being three big things of sushi.
Oh, sounds like heaven.
Yeah, but then I ordered a main as well, which I couldn't possibly have had. I would have walked out of there like...
Looking a bit like me.
Like you.
Only with more hair, taller, wealthier.
You appear to have lost some weight in the interview.
Yeah, dude. It hasn't been as good the last month or two. But in your story. Let's go back to your story.
I walked out of there with my mains because they'd already ordered it.
You literally had none of it.
I didn't have my mains at all.
Just take away.
It's in the fridge at home.
Oh, get into it. There's nothing like a good takeaway. Anyway.
But it was nice. It was very pleasant.
But I wanted to ask you.
I haven't done this for a while.
At what point did you know that you were segueing from dinner with your mate into a date? Because I when that happens to me, which, I mean, currently I'm not like dating any old friends. But when I want to kind of like transition and be like, look, more's going on here than we just pals, I try and say, like, this is a date now. And then they're like, oh, I don't know about a date. And then you're like, no, it's a date. Okay, otherwise, let's not do it.
I don't think either of us are really in the mood for anything serious.
So how do you know it's a date and you didn't just go for dinner with your pal?
Because it was,
been a pal
it, was just the, it was just the two of us, and I don't normally make, you know, I would say, ah, no, let's all get together on the weekend or something.
I see.
I'm trying not to get invested in this.
Oh, you must. Oh, you must. We need you invested in this.
So
that's what hard. You're for.
Please don't.
Because I'm also thinking, like, I'm glad, all right, you had some sushi, so that's good. At least that's like a nice, you know, civil and sexy thing to eat as opposed to just like a steak.
Yeah, sexy thing to eat, guys, until it's not lekker.
We've got to get to the news, but I got the funniest anime.
What is going on that
animated
screen?
It's like someone's done a picture of Sia, but it's I suppose it's a cartoon version of Sia, but he's like pumped up, and it says after Sia claps the gym, he becomes a boot.
You're a boot, Sia.
Am I wearing bedazzled underwear?
I can't believe I ripped you. Look. See, that's Decabol and zero carbohydrates in action right there, China. When did you last have a carb, but 2014.
Clearly.
One of those Christmas hot cross buns, but
those spicy ones.
At least it was cross, but
I also have a tattoo now on my arm, because, you know, as one does.
See, can
it's
you
a
put,
tribal, Yugoslavian significance, but
who
can
knows?
You put, can you put this picture up on our...
Yeah,
Instagram.
Are those cage fighting gloves that are Speedo?
Yeah, it's a Speedo and cage fighting gloves from Woody. Woody, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I love you, Woody.
Picture of Sia. A tidbit of information. Government gave instructions to remove books from the book list, a.k.a. book challenge list, that make the ANC or its top brass like ACE and all those corrupt ministers, or the fact that Transnet doesn't receive work from PRASA until December. They're covering their asses so bad. This with the trains that are cancelled by the dozens. P.S. Love you guys. Listen, I love your stream of consciousness, Hellman, that you've just sent us now, but I don't understand what the hell you're talking about. So if you could just, when you come off the drugs, send us another message that explains that a little bit better. I don't know anything about a book challenge list. I don't know what this is that you're referring to. So if you could, just clarify. I'm a little lost, dude. Good news all round. As I said yesterday, I was confused as to why you were single. Well, I mean, let's not all get excited about this. That's from AS, who sent us a message yesterday.
Too late.
And then this came in from Carl. He says, Gareth, this poor girl's listening to this. She's disappointed with you saying that neither of you are in the mood for anything serious. She's already practiced her new signature, shame man. Carl, no, you see, that's exactly the point.
I do tell you, I get a lot of people like that, that obviously now I'm on the show and know you, that like... I don't think seriously expect me to really set you up, but suffice it to say you are popular in that way amongst my female Chinas.
Well, which is terrific, and long may it last. I mean, there's going to be a point where they look at me and they're horrified. Probably already happened, for all I know.
Yeah, once they get to know you, it's different kettle of fish altogether. I say, like, dating a person who's outwardly sexy that you don't know is like moving to Cape Town. Like, I've had like, because, you know, I made FHM for like 9 years, and we by no means had a habit of boning the models. It would occasionally just so happen that there was a connection between someone there, and like, I think, like, I can think of 3 or 4 examples in 10 years where, like, romances. But a level C model I met there, and then I would run into her out, and I dated her for about 6 months. And I say, like, Cape Town versus Joburg. Joburg is the fat girl that used to be great in bed and really loved you, that you broke up with to go to Cape Town to date someone pretty, who once the boobs and the bum wore off, you realized you're dating a fucking moron.
Oh.
Good point. Well put.
Yeah, so
I think that's a good way of looking at it.
A very attractive person is great and everything, but it's... The lack of substance, if there is indeed a lack of substance, will come to the fore sooner than later. Or, I mean, you've won the lottery of life if you find someone who's very attractive to you and a wonderful person.
Right.
And, like, you know, enjoy your yacht if you're a guy and that's happened to you. But, but I mean, the point is, over the near term, hot's good. Over the medium to long term, it's very secondary to, like, someone that you know and like.
I couldn't agree more. And don't think that that's going to happen every time. Most of the time it is not, and it will be disappointing. Now, let us go straight to some news, shall we? Got a lot of things to talk about in the news this morning. First of all, Gauteng Premier David Makura says, access to education and health are defining features of human civilization. Makura was giving clarity about the national health insurance in the Gauteng legislature on Tuesday. He says, NHI will assist South Africans based on their healthcare needs and not their level of income. Yeah, this is standard Marxist principle. Give according to someone's needs, from those according to their abilities. It's just, this is the most backward, retrograde, 18th century, 19th century bullshit you've ever heard in your life. David Makura, go to hell. You represent a government that cannot manage a piss up in a brewery. Now you want to take people's health and make that a state objective? Please no. We don't want to die. We didn't mind you fucking up. We didn't mind you screwing up. We didn't mind you wasting trillions of our money. Well, we minded.
Yeah, we kind of minded. I wasn't wild about it personally.
But I'm particularly incensed that you should now wish to take over my healthcare when I would not trust you to sit the right way around on a lavatory.
Gauteng Premier David Makura says access to education and health are defining features of human civilization. Makura was giving clarity about NHI in the Gauteng provincial.
Yeah, let's look at how well they've done with education. They've stultified a whole generation of people in this country.
Two, actually.
Two generations of people. I think you're probably right, Gord.
Yeah, what's it, a decade, a generation?
Yeah. So there are two generations of young people who are being churned out of schools who are substandard in terms of literacy, numeracy, basic cognitive skills, the ability to find themselves useful in an economy, the ability to be productive.
And to have a fair shot in what should be like a competitive thing.
Yeah, thing.
Or to have a fair chance to play in the thing. Of the sport, like of the sport of thing. You know what I mean?
Funnily enough, I do.
You just
made more sense than Angie Mochefa has in the last 12 years.
You can't be expected to play for the first team if you're missing a leg.
Right.
Legislature. Now, he says NHI will assist South Africans based on their healthcare needs and not their level of income. For more on that, we're joined now by ENC's Masego Reslaga, who attended that and is here to tell us more. Masego, thank you so much for coming in. Let's start with...
Woman, she was paid to sit there and listen to David Makura talk shit. You know, the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. Margaret Thatcher said that, and it's still the truest thing ever. I don't know where they think, you know, everyone will get the health care they need. Don't worry about the cost. Well, who do you think's going to pay for this, douchebag? You can't even bring in the right amount of tax anymore. Your own tax SARS commissioner yesterday said that people are taking their money and hiding it like never before because they don't trust the government and they don't want to pay taxes.
They're withholding so much money of mine. And when I say so much, I mean all things being relative. I'm not a squillionaire, but it's a lot of money to me that they're sitting on. And it's like I've never had, in my experience as a taxpayer, which is 15 plus years now, I've only one time had to pay in, and thanks to the glory of my tax lady, she managed to make it. It was like $2,000 or $3,000. Yeah. I get between $3,000 and $63,000 out every year from tax, and I have never been. It's never taken well, after they approve
clear,
your claim.
Clear, that was your money to start.
Yeah,
with.
Yeah, sure, right. Sure. And every time I submit my claim and it gets approved, it sometimes takes a couple of weeks to get approved. They send you a thing saying your claim has been approved or not. And my claim was approved 2 months ago, and I'm just at their mercy for when they're going
to
pay me.
Well, I've got bad news for you. You're going to have to get a guy called the tax ombudsman, and you're going to have to actually take them to pieces before you'll get your money
look
back.
I'm not holding my breath, or I'm not floating the whole project on getting that money anytime soon, but yes, it would be helpful.
Well, here's the funny thing about the NHI. This is our after-tax money. NHI is going to take money that you've already been taxed on and had to pay tax on, and that you've then saved into your own medical aid scheme, and they're going to try to attach that, and the state will manage it. Now, forgive me, I have not seen any evidence that the state can manage anything properly, and this is a lot more complicated. This involves the price of medicines, It involved. I mean, one of the reasons.
Ooh,
the Soviet
tenders. We've got such a big industry of generic medication, and to be fair, having worked on some of their campaigns, like some really good companies that do a lot of work in making quality generics affordable.
Yeah.
But now that because local manufacture, now when there's local manufacture of something like that, and government gets involved. Attenderpreneurship.
Oh yeah,
there's just begging
well,
for tenderpreneurship.
You know, one of the reasons the Soviet Union eventually did collapse, and there were many reasons, but one of them was that they had a committee who used to decide on pricing. So every day they had to approve the prices of 10,000 or more things. Jeez. Every day. And how did they do this? Thumbsuck, because. The reason we know what a price of something is that's what the market is prepared
market
to pay.
Dictates, that's what
now,
it's
if
worth.
Now, if you live in a socialist system, there is no market dynamic. So you actually have to just arbitrarily decide a price.
Yeah, people, myself included, I will admit, bitch and complain about the price of their Mac products. But the price is that much because that's how much people will pay.
People are prepared to
pay and grumble.
Yeah.
But maybe you'll know the details of the story, but there's an interesting story that I heard once, and I think I may have even heard it from you, of how when the Soviet Union were trying to improve their relations with the West, they went to their minister came to London, and like after a day of being shown around London, he was just perplexed, and they were like, "Well, what's going on?" And he's like, "I just want to understand, like, how is there so much bread?" And they were like, "Well, there just is. The bakeries make the bread." And he's like, "But how do they determine the price of it? How are they able to manufacture enough?" And he's like, "Well, because that's how much people need." So like, but then how do you make it cheap? It's like, we don't necessarily. People pay what it's worth. Anyway, I don't do the story. Justice at all. But this dude's explanation of how capitalism creates a market, controls the prices, and increases availability was like mind-blowing to the Russian guy.
Of course.
May well be an urban legend, but I didn't do it any justice.
I mean,
but
we haven't
really,
even moved
really
on from
sense.
This first story, but it's driving everyone crazy. These guys are just not able to understand the market dynamic. Listen to David Makura. It's like you're talking to someone who was born in 1883 and is never managed to figure out how money works. It's just incredible. You can tell these people have been paid from the public purse their entire adult lives, or they've been in poverty. Those are the only two options they've ever had.
Equitable access to education and health is one of the defining features of human civilization in the 21st century. It's no longer an issue of whether you are left or right as a society, but whether you are able to offer young and old, particularly those in their retirement age.
You know why? Because he's moving into his retirement age. He's barely lucid anymore.
Okay.
Anyway, look, let's just leave him alone. I can't actually bear to hear a moron churning out their opinion about complete and utter nonsense. It's just, it drives me to drink. The National Association of School Governing Bodies has welcomed the Gauteng Education Department's move to shut down illegal schools. Apparently, pupils from 20 illegal schools in Ivory Park are currently being placed in new schools.
What's an illegal school?
Yeah, what is an illegal school?
Well,
I mean, the school of Satanism and satanic sacrifice.
These are schools that are not, again, government approved. So, you know, someone might set up a little aftercare center, or they might set up a community teaching. Correct, and then you know, someone, two or three of the old gogos in town might come and teach people how to write or how
I'll
to read.
Teach
or,
these ones.
Damn them for that! Yeah.
I know. So because they're not approved, and the unions can't get into them and ruin them, they have to be shut down. And of course, these schools may be horrible. They may be,
but it's damn sure better than nothing.
Well, they may be on the take. They may be charging a lot of money. They may not be giving any return on that investment.
Okay.
So they should probably be checked out. But again, you know, government needs to put its rubber stamp on something in order for it to be legit. And this is bureaucracy at work. Anyway, there's just a word on that. And then everyone's talking about the Gavin Watson crash.
Yeah. The gift that just keeps on giving.
I heard
this
and I just like my eyes glazed over after a few seconds. I'm like, I don't know what any of this is about. Summing corruption, summing assassination, summing like it feels Clinton-y.
It just makes me feel like I'm in a Shonda Rhimes drama series right now.
Apparently they spotted Hillary Clinton.
Breaking news.
She came in a helicopter and she dropped in. She was wearing a Mission Impossible outfit and then she caused the accident and then fucked off immediately.
Did she have a moustache just as a great disguise?
Like one of my favorite ever memes was a picture of Hillary Clinton pointing at the screen and it's like, you better watch your fucking step or I'll kill yourself.
Kill yourself.
So apparently all the theories around the fatal road crash that claimed the life of Bosasa chief executive Gavin Watson have been swirling around. An accident analyst said it would take thorough investigation to back up claims that it was a suicide. Watson, who's 71, whose company Bosasa was alleged to be running one of the complex corruption schemes in the country post-1994, was killed when he was driving to OR Tambo International Airport. However, some media reports suggest he was not carrying enough money for the trip and had no passport with him.
According to News 24, and the likes of Mandy Wiener and Adrian Besson contributed to this article, said that a wallet was found in the car, but the wallet only had 70 rands. There was no sight of a boarding pass, any sort of flight details. There was no luggage or travel bags.
He took all that stuff with him.
Because he actually did leave.
But I mean,
he's currently in the Caribbean.
Who does cash for overseas trips, really? Like,
no one.
Keep wondering about Forex.
And who carries a boarding pass?
I'm not allowed to talk about the stuff that I work on, but I've done some advertising to do with services involving Forex. And I'm like, is this really a thing? Is this really something that we want to put to the front of what we say we do? Like, easier to get Forex. Like, why? I travel a lot. I mean, as those who listen to the show regularly may know, I'm about to go to Australia in October. Very excited. So I try to travel as much as I can afford to, and I've literally never taken Forex. I know there are some countries where it's like you are advised to arrive with an envelope of dollars because, like, to get started and to get, like, in Nigeria, just to get, like, out of the airport, whatever, you need to have greased a few hands with, this is what I'm told, with some actual US dollars. And, like, just have some US dollars handy because those will be handy on the street from time to time. I'm not talking about those sort of places. All over Europe, I just activate my credit card. Mm-hmm. I have a spare credit card I don't use just purely for the purpose of having a Visa card and a MasterCard. So between the two of them, I've never not been able to get money. One in five ATM says, like, sorry, can't help you right now. And then you just go to the next one. Draw cash or swipe. Like, I get there may be need for Forex here and there, but why is it still a big thing?
No, well, you don't need... I don't know who wrote these articles. You mentioned Mandy Wiener and Adrian Besson. They obviously slashed the budgets of these newsrooms so badly that these people never fly anymore. But the fact is, you don't fly. You don't need a boarding pass. You get it at the airport, you idiots.
So I'm
passport is a tricky one, but I mean, who knows?
Well,
but
maybe
he could have been flying domestic.
Or he could have got a private jet and got out of here. I'm still saying that this is not impossible. Mandy Wiener... And she's credible. Mandy Wiener published some kind of tweet yesterday where she said she has photographs of Gavin Watson in the car dead and that he had a slash on his throat.
Well, if that's the case, you can't really... I mean, obviously you'd want to see that.
She won't. If
she
won't
says she won't post
photos,
them.
Yeah. I mean, but what... Why say you have them if you're not going to show them?
Well,
keep stum about them in general.
The end
or
of
show
her
them?
Tweet was something along the lines of, so for anyone who thinks he might be in the Cayman Islands, I think not, because she's seen these photos. I don't trust anyone anymore.
Yeah.
Some of the questions that are also raised around this, though, is why are there no visible brake marks on the tarmac? And there's a lot of people doing investigations on the accident scene, and this is a pertinent point to raise. Why are there no visible brakes on the tarmac? If it was an accident and, you know, you'd panic and you'd try to stop as much as possible. The questions around why was he driving the car, that has sort of been answered, because supposedly his car had a mechanical fault, and that's why he had to use the company car.
I mean, look, why was this car towed by the police?
Well, that's who usually. I think either do the insurance company usually do it, or do the insurance company at least come and take pictures of the scene before it gets taken away by the police?
It's a good question.
And I don't know whether to believe this or not, but yesterday on social media I saw someone post screenshots, but these things can be doctored as well, screenshots of a website where you can clarify the ownership of a car based on searching the number plate.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the photos that we've seen, they used that number plate to search on this website. And it says that no vehicles of this nature are found on record.
Ooh.
I don't know anymore.
I'll tell you what, I don't trust any of these people involved. I don't trust the Watsons. I don't trust Bosasa as a company. I don't trust the ANC, and therefore I don't trust the government. I don't trust the police. I think they're all a bunch of liars. And I think we'll eventually find out. You know why? How we'll find out? Because they're all incompetent.
I would suggest for the song for the morning, one of Papa Roach's very catchy new singles called Who Do You Trust?
Papa Roach.
It's fun and because it goes with what Gareth's just been saying. Trust.
Well, I had to take a moment not to get carried away yesterday when I also found out memorial details for Gavin Watson. His memorial will be taking place on Thursday.
Are you burning him?
Oh, I know. Google, I don't know.
And not in a cool way, not on like send a ship out into the lake and once it's kind of like 100 meters away, get your best archers to fire arrows onto a pyre full of his favorite shit. Not that kind of burning.
I did contemplate going just for the sauciness of it all.
Why don't you go? That'd be interesting.
Then I look at someone the wrong way. Next thing, my fingerprints have been taken off the Home Affairs system. Then I'm gone next week and no one knows. Mm-mm.
All right, in other news, Viola Davis is going to portray Michelle Obama in a Showtime series under development in America's First Ladies. Davis is an executive producer on the project. It'll peel back the curtain on the lives of presidential spouses. The first season will focus on Eleanor Roosevelt, Betty Ford, and Obama.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
She must get her Michelle Obama arms in the works.
First Ladies. It's apparently very exciting and... you know, she's done some amazing work. She was in Steve McQueen's critically acclaimed thriller, Widows. It's based on a heist movie. But she's now going to play Michelle Obama.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So there's Viola Davis doing her thing. And then I saw this story in the news yesterday, and I thought, oh, this is horrible. You know, Ben said he was ENCA's news boss.
Yeah.
He died in a tragic diving accident in
Not
Mozambique.
Ben said.
Really?
Yes, I promise you.
I remember him from TV from growing up.
That's right.
Ben. And I thought it was the best fucking name ever for a TV journalist person.
It was. He died on Monday on holiday in Mozambique.
No, man. How?
Yes.
Oh,
he was holidaying
shit.
In Mozambique. He drowned in a diving accident Monday afternoon.
Oh, man. That's also a horrible way to go.
You know who told me about the story? Jane yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, yeah, why are these people, if you know you cannot swim, why are you jumping into the water? Yeah.
Jane has answers for everything, yeah.
Yeah, but the sea is angry water.
That's it to anyone.
That's part of
drown.
What makes it so much fun, and that's part of what makes it such a risk.
Yeah, and you know, with these diving situations, he could have had faulty equipment. He could have been diving in a place where he couldn't get out easily. He might have done some... Maybe he was proficient in this.
There was a movie I watched. I was watching movies for FHM back then, so somewhere between 10 and 20 years ago, somewhere in that decade, from between 2002 to like 2010, I watched a movie, and it was like based on true events, and it was about this couple that got... They accidentally miscounted the number of divers on a boat somewhere in like the Caribbean.
Oh, my God. I watched that. It ruined
so like, the shark. There was a couple that got on, but the wife wasn't feeling well, so they got off. And then just when the boat was about to go, they changed their mind and they got back on. So now the captain had in his mind that there were too many people on the boat because of a proper like honest mistake. And then when they got everybody, these guys had sort of drifted just slightly away from the dive site, and when the captain was counting the people back on the boat, he had the full number, because of course now there are two more people than they're supposed to be. And this couple just got left in the sea, and they treaded water for like the better part of a day, and eventually the guy kind of gave up and drowned first, and they were getting nipped at by small sharks.
Imagine
when I say
that.
Small sharks, I mean still like a meter or a meter and a half long and big enough to be fucking terrifying because shark. And then like these little nips started to cause them to bleed, and then more sharks came. So while they were like giving... That is for me one of my absolute worst possible fears. I'm not especially afraid of the ocean, but being stranded in the sea, especially if the water is so deep, like in deep water. Like just being in the sea in deep water.
We have to keep treading water.
No, dude. Because like you go out Cape Town, I've never done shark baiting or any of that shit, but I take the little cruisers and go look for whales and like go on a little and when, once you get like half a K offshore in Cape Town, the water becomes like so blue it's almost black. And those waves are like big rolling hills that just, you know, from primordial dawn of time, they just don't give a fuck about you.
Mm-hmm.
And like that is where the power of the planet is.
Oh no.
These big rising and sinking hills of water. And you just, and you don't know what's beneath you. And you know it goes down like a kilometer underneath you. And any shit can be down there. And it's cold.
I honestly
and
have
it's gray
now.
And it's
like
frothy. And even
he,
if it's not particularly
it so well.
Even if it's not particularly bad weather, it's violent and it's rocking you back and forth. And you're just like unspottable from any helicopter
it's like
because
a
you're a tiny little white or brown speck in a vastness of dark blue purple blackness, and you fucked and you don't know whether you want some big scary thing to come and eat you so it's over, or if you want to tread water for 6 to 18 hours and then slowly drown. I'm sorry about Ben Said, I really am.
Oh, I was gonna say, let's get back to poor old Ben Said. Apparently Jeremy Maggs said Ben was one of the country's best television journalists, and his loss to the station is immense. Having just rejoined the station, he was already making his presence felt across all aspects of the business. We're all in deep shock. He joined ENCA as a producer in 2000, before rising through the ranks to become senior reporter and eventually group news editor. He left in 2015 to take up a senior management position at TRT. E-Media Investments extended its sincerest condolences to his wife, Nikki, and his daughters, Lily and Bella. What a horrible thing. You go on holiday with your parents and your dad doesn't come back with you.
Oh, man.
That's horrible.
It's very, very nasty. So, obviously, our condolences, too. That is the news. Brings us up to 7 o'clock.
There we go.
And we've got some interesting stuff coming up after 7. Stick around for that. Here, by popular demand from Gord, is the song, Who Do You Trust?
Yeah, it's a good song.
Names have been verified by professionals. Papa Roach holds no responsibility. The shit about you.
Alright.
It opens with a skit.
Alright, let's take a listen.
I forgot about the skit. Apologies.
All right.
News you can trust.
News you can trust.
Yeah. I'm Lucy Trustwell.
And I'm Larry Dickman.
Bringing you the news you can trust. Up next, an incredible story of courage and perseverance when a baby almost drowns but rides a shark to safety.
You know, Lucy, I never could trust babies.
But first, we have a treat for you tonight in the studio. The most important band on the planet, perhaps even the universe, Papa's Roach.
Oh, Lucy, let's see what these guys got.
This is CliffCentral.com.